Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
My name is Russell. I'm an alcoholic.
I'm
a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 17, 1981. And for that, I'm very grateful. And I'm grateful and feel privileged that I'm here tonight. I really am. I'll talk a little bit about this kind of stuff later. I'm just going to share a little stuff with you, and we're probably not going to cover everything in the next 45 minutes, but maybe we will cover everything. We pretty much will probably cover everything. As a matter of fact, we're going to cover everything you need to know in Alcoholics Anonymous, probably in the next 15 minutes. Then you can leave. And then I'll spend the next 11 weeks talking about other stuff. But you'll probably hear everything you need to hear about Alcoholics Anonymous maybe in the next 10 minutes. And some people in the next 10 minutes will be cooked. And that'll be it. It'll just be a matter of filling in the gaps after that. And some people will go for the next 12 years and will never hear anything. And that's just the way it is. And I see a lot of people that I know from other places, and that's gratifying. I'm glad you finally made it, Liz. Liz is Andy's wife. She's great. And I just want to say that to embarrass her. That's all. That's good to see her. It's good to see a lot of you guys here. See a lot of you guys who come down to our little group on Saturday, all the way down in South Miami, and even a couple guys who go to Bible study with me, and a whole bunch of stuff like that. And I'm going to share a little bit about my life and my experience, strength, and hope. You know, my old sponsor, I've had three sponsors, all wonderful men. I always aspired to have what they had. I hope you want what your sponsor has. And unfortunately, you know, sponsors, like everybody else, get old and they pass away. And one of my sponsors has been talking about our experiences, which are really, you know, the book says our stories, you know, explain what we used to be like, what happened. It's our stories that are important. As a matter of fact, in the big book, it says our personal adventures before and after make clear the three pertinent ideas. Our personal adventures are important, you know. You know, my first sponsor, Bob Sullivan, used to say, when a man with experience meets a man with money, the man with experience will walk away with the money, and the man with the money will walk away with an experience. You know, we got a lot of theories around here, and if you're an alcoholic, we got a lot of bright ideas, and we have a lot of you don't understands, and I've got an idea, and this is what I'm going to do, and, you know, I got a lot of guys that ask me their sponsor, and then they call me up and tell me what they've decided to do. And everything, they don't stay sober. And then every once in a while, I get a guy who calls me up and asks me what he thinks he should do. So I'm just going to explain a little bit about my experience. I'm going to read a lot from the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is pure AA. And that's the deal. And some of you are going to be real uncomfortable with this whole deal, and I can't explain to you how much that upsets me. If you had any idea how good I feel about people who are mad at me, you would not be mad at me just to piss me off. And I mean, I'll tell you what, if you're an Alcoholics Anonymous and you're doing this thing and you're not upset, you're probably not doing it. But so we're going to talk a little bit about different things, and I'm going to read something. First of all, I want to read up. I'll tell you a little story about. By the way, let me just make myself comfortable. I got to be comfortable with you guys. I'm comfortable anyway, but I'm going to get even more comfortable. My sponsor, when I first came in, you know, you guys probably weren't like me, but I had a lot of, like, resentments. I didn't have to worry about my resentments outside of AA. To get a resentment, all I had to do was go to a meeting. I mean, people just pissed me off, and alcoholics really pissed me off, you know, just because of the way they are. You know how that is. And we just say stuff and breathe and stuff like that. Being alive next to me. And people would say stuff at meetings and piss me off. And I think the meeting was supposed to go this way and it went that way and all sorts of stuff. And why didn't everybody just listen to me? And I had all the answers. And my sponsor said I had to lower my expectations on people. I had all sorts of expectations. I remember one guy, I was early on, maybe about 3 weeks sober or something like that, and I came to an AA meeting and some guy got up at the mic, and of course by the time I had 3 weeks I knew everything, and I had already done the steps, you know, because I think I was sitting next to a guy with 2 days and I said, I've got 3 weeks, and he said, really? And he says, yeah. I said, go to meetings, it all works. He says, thanks. I said, holy shit, I'm doing the 12 step. Yeah, I'm on 12 step, or step 12 already. And I guess I was, I probably was, but you know. In any event, so this guy got up and I had 3 weeks and I was at this meeting. He said, my name is, and I had gone to like 3 weeks of meetings, so I pretty much knew how this thing went. And I knew how it was supposed to go. And I understood because I had read a lot of the book and I knew that you're never cured. I knew that we were recovering. We were always recovering. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I knew how we were recovering. As a matter of fact, I knew that if you thought you were cured, that was like a bad thing. I knew that people that thought they were cured and thought that was a horrible thing. And so one day I went to the South Dade room of Alcoholics Anonymous and some guy got on the microphone and, you know, he looked like he had been around for a while. And this is what he said. He said, my name is Joe and I'm a recovered alcoholic. And then he spoke for an hour. I can't tell you what else he said. Because after he said, I'm a recovered alcoholic, I couldn't hear anything. You know, that thing started going in my mind, you know, the 50,000 voices trying to crucify him. How could he say that? He's hurting people. People are going to die in the room thinking that they cured. I mean, there was all sorts of things going on in my mind. How can they let him get away with them? What kind of idiot invited him to talk anyway? Hasn't he read the book Alcoholics Anonymous? Should I get up there and grab the mic and tell him that this guy's a phony? He's full of crap. And then, of course, the age old, what does he think? He's better than me? You know what I mean? I'm recovering. He's better. He's cured. Because it is all about me, you know. And then after the meeting was over and I hadn't heard a thing and I was just livid and mad. As a matter of fact, I needed another meeting to recover from that meeting because of what that guy had said. And, you know, and what's even worse is I was so right and he was so wrong. And what could I do? I only had 3 weeks. Who could I tell? So I immediately went up to my sponsor. I said, you wouldn't believe what that guy said. And he said, what did he say? He said, he's a recovered alcoholic. And he says, well, you are. I said, what do you mean I am? He says, well, haven't you read the big book? I said, I read it. We're not a cure. He says, haven't you read it? He says, we read the foreword, Russell. We are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. Well, I wonder what the rest of his talk was about. Holy shit. This guy, maybe he actually read the book. And knew it. Just think how good my talk tonight could have been if I had actually heard that son of a bitch. You know what I mean? It's a serious disease. And so, you know, I've been doing step series like this for like 23 years. Last time I was here was like 24 years ago, something like that. And that's the last time I was at this room. So you gotta lower your expectations because a lot of you come here and I don't know how many, now a lot of you I know have been through my step series and so you know what this is all about and you know how scary this is gonna get. Because the truth is you never know what's gonna happen. I promise you I'm gonna mention step one sometime during the next 40 minutes or so. And as a matter of fact, I already did, so forget about that. You know? So the point is, you probably have an expectation that on a step series, like what we have is we start with step one and we go to step 12, and that's just not going to happen in this deal, okay? But I want to promise you, I want to assure you that we're going to hit all 12 steps and probably a few more that you haven't even heard on of during this series. As a matter of fact, we're going to hit every step tonight. As a matter of fact, we've already hit them all. I know you don't know it, do you? You see, you don't know that. We've hit every step already. You know, one time I was at I was doing the steps about 23 years ago over at a group called the Homestead Group. And I was on the fourth step. That's what I was supposed to be on. And that was when I actually knew how to do the steps. I mean, I want to explain to you that unfortunately, when I had 15 years, between 3 and 15 years, I really could do a dynamite step series. After 15 years, everything started falling apart. So, you know, really, you're getting the worst part of the deal. But when I used to be able to do the steps, I was doing the fourth step, and And at this meeting, I did it just a terrible force. It was just terrible. It's just the worst. You see, that was, this was at a time in my life where I thought what the 12 steps said is my job is to carry, I thought my job was to carry the message. That's what I thought the 12 steps said, that my job was to carry the message. You know, if you think your car job is to carry the message, then, you know, I gotta think things like, I gotta be good tonight, I gotta be funny, you gotta laugh, everybody's gotta go out and stay sober and talk, then I'm sort of responsible for the result. And so it's like a heavy burden, and I didn't realize that there was a word in there that says that all I have to do is try to carry the message. You know, the difference between carrying the message and trying to carry the message is if you're carrying the message, then it's my responsibility that you get the message. You see, and how am I going to have that responsibility? Because I have no responsibility. I have no power to get you sober or even get you to the point where you understand what I'm talking about or even live within my skin. Where am I going to get the power? My big book says I have no power. It says there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. I am powerless. It doesn't say Russell has like 1% of the power. He's walking in here. God is like 99. He's like a sharing deal. So you know, what I understand now is that my job is just try to carry the message, which means I do the best step I can do tonight that I'm capable of doing. I show up and do the best, which could be the lousiest step meeting I've ever done in my life, but it's going to be the best one I can do tonight. And that's my only job, and if I do that, I meet my responsibility. And I do basically what we're supposed to do in this thing to realize that those incredible, remarkable things in your life, because it says when we sincerely made this decision, and we're serious like this, he says all sorts of remarkable things happened in our lives. If unbelievably remarkable, you know what it says in the big book? It says we've experienced much of heaven and we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. Hey, listen, if all you're doing is not drinking, God bless you, and I think that's great. And you know something, you could have the lousiest day in the world. If you got through the day without drinking, you're an alcoholic, you're a superstar. But you want to know something? This book is more about not drinking. This is about a new way of life. This is about experiencing much of heaven, being rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence, which you had not even dreamed. This is about if you would sincerely take a certain position in certain areas and change your attitude about certain things, like Dr. Jung said, here and there, once in a while, individuals, you know, we don't know how it happens. It's phenomena, which means scientific way of saying miracle. Here and then, once in a while, ideas, emotions, and attitudes, which is the whole deal. Of these people's lives are suddenly shifted one side and they become dominated by a whole different array of ideas, emotions, attitudes. They are reborn. They are reborn. That's in the big book. Because it says if we sincerely took one of these positions, remarkable things happen. That the God we believe in, being all powerful, that's what it says. It doesn't say higher power. It says highest power. I mean, why would I, I don't know about what your God is. I decided to choose the highest power because, look, I got big problems. I didn't want to get some, like, vice president of power, you know what I mean? Assistant deputy of power, you know? I went for the highest power because it said being all powerful, he will supply us everything we need if we stay close to him and do his work well, which is different than doing what you want to do. Which is different, I think, than doing what you want to do. So I'm at this meeting doing my thing, you know, doing the steps because they asked me to do it. And I do this thing, and it's a lousy, in my mind, a terrible, the worst fourth step I've ever done, which means they don't love me, they're not laughing, nothing's happening, and I don't feel the love, you know, and I don't even know what I'm saying. And, you know, I walk out of there, and I got to come back the next week to the fifth step because that's the deal. And I walk away, and as I'm driving away, I'm thinking about how terrible I am, how bad I am, because, you know, the truth is, this is the disease of being selfish and self-centered. This is the disease about always, constantly, incessantly thinking about yourself all the time. And it's always bad thoughts, not good thoughts. Somebody once said to me, you know, I'll be okay. He says, you know, you'll be okay when you can drive in the car with the radio off. And I didn't know what they were talking about because I'd never driven in a car with the radio off. Because I always had the radio on or something blasting or something going on because I could not stand being in the situation where nothing was happening because then there would be silence. And when there was silence or I wasn't talking or I wasn't on the phone or something wasn't going on, then during that time of silence or peace, it wasn't peaceful for me because all that would happen is I would have thinking. I'd be thinking about bad thoughts, about people. I never wanted to think the way I think or have the feelings that I had. And I would always think about bad thoughts about myself and other people. So I always had to have a radio on or a TV on or something going on so I wouldn't have to sit around uncomfortable in my skin thinking about myself and having those feelings and thoughts the way they were. You know those thoughts, you know that tape that went, you know, I'm an asshole, I'm an idiot, I'm a jerk, I'm stupid, I'm an idiot, I don't deserve that, I ought to die, I ought to kill myself, you know, all that crap that I know doesn't apply to any of you guys. So the bottom line is I'm driving away thinking about all that crappy thoughts. That's this 3-4 years sober. how I'm not going to come back, you know, and all that sort of stuff. And of course I am, because I want to, because the one thing I had going for me in early sobriety, the one thing I had going for me is, above everything, I didn't want to drink. An incredible desire not to drink can solve a lot of problems. Because you got a lot of feelings and emotions, you know, and you can be taken out in another a lot of areas, but if you are so fearful of the drink that you will do everything, that'll sort of stop you from going off to the side. It's sort of like that leash that God has on you, on your neck. You know, some people, I'll tell you, everybody who's ever said to me that I sponsor says, don't worry about me, I'm not going to drink again, has always ended up drinking. Always ended up drinking. You know, the truth is, I have 27 years sobriety, and I can be drunk in an hour, and I absolutely believe that, but I'm not scared of it, and I don't know how to explain that to you, except that's just the way it is. I've never had a point in my life where I felt that I wouldn't ever drink again, that I'm beyond drinking, that drinking couldn't get me. I've always felt, some way, somehow, and I can't explain this, that even after a step series, no matter how good I feel, like within a half an hour, I could be drunk on my ass. I can't even explain that deal. But a lot of things in here don't have to be explained. That's what's good about AA. You know, it's kind of hard to do these talks at the Kiwanis Club. They sort of look at you funny, you know? Especially when you say, I couldn't stop. Especially when you say, I looked at a guy and I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. They don't understand that at the Kiwanis Club. I said, what do you mean you can't stop drinking? But the good thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is you can talk and you say things and people will nod their head because you want something, they've been there. So you can express a feeling or something that happened to you that other people experienced. You know, so the bottom line is, I'm driving away from this meeting, thinking it's the worst meeting in the world. I'm never going to go back. They didn't like me. So the next week I did, of course, show up. And I take the podium. Before I take the podium, some guy from the back says to me, comes up to me, says, can I talk to you? I said, oh, he says, my name's Ralph. I just want to tell you, you saved my life last week. I said, he says, you saved my life last week. I said, what? He says, yeah, I'll tell you, I was going to go out. I was going to drink. I was going to kill myself. I felt terrible. Nothing was working for me in AA. When you said, I was there listening to you, and I was watching you, when you said, the chicken was on the roof. My entire life changed. All of a sudden, everything came together. So I'm listening to what he's saying. Now, I realized I had never said, the chicken was on the roof. Now, of course, I took full credit for it. I said, oh yeah, that chicken on the roof. Always say that stuff, because I didn't want to burst his bubble. But. Well, I knew what he was talking about because I was talking some poultry back then, and he was referring to when I was talking about the turkey in the basement thing, and he got it all wrong, and he heard chicken on, I said turkey in the basement, he said he heard chicken on the roof, and you know what I realized? What I realized is I was up there trying to do the best I could to carry this message, thinking I was doing a horrible job. Just like Ebby Thatcher, 70 years ago. Ebby Thatcher, 70 years ago, visited Bill Wilson. Bill Wilson, and Bill Wilson pushed the drink towards him, and he pushed the drink back, and he says, no, and he says, I've got religion. And when Ebby Thatcher left, after trying to 12-step Bill and talk to Bill about this program, Bill continued to drink. Thatcher probably walked out the door thinking, well, that was a waste of time. And everybody in here is sober because of that meeting. That waste of time. Bill continued to drink for 6 months. So I'm sitting there, and then I realized, I'm sitting there thinking that I'm just there showing up trying to, doing a lousy job, doing a lousy AA meeting in my mind. Some poor guy in the back of the room who's about to commit suicide, about to kill himself, and the only thing he comes to that meeting for is he's going to say, because he's got hope in his heart. He doesn't know me from Adam. He doesn't know what's going on, but he's saying, maybe this meeting, maybe this deal, there's some guy in here who's saying, maybe this guy, maybe this meeting, maybe tonight, maybe this will explain it. Maybe this is the reason I feel the way I am. Maybe this is what's going on. Maybe this will explain to me why I shouldn't blow my brains out. Maybe because he's back there hoping beyond hope that he's going to hear something. And I'm sitting there on the podium doing the worst meeting I've ever done in my life, in my opinion, and out goes turkey in the basement. And it floats across the room, and it gets over to where he is, and it goes into his ear, turkey in the basement, and God does what God does best. And he knows the only thing that's missing in this guy's heart, in this guy's mind, is chicken on the roof. And it goes in turkey in the basement, and chicken on the roof comes through, you know what I mean? And the guy is healed because of his faith and because of his hope, and I get the damn credit. And you know, I did a meeting in Bali, Indonesia, a group of about, 400 or 500 people. And I did this meeting, and I did the thing, spoke for whatever it was, an hour, hour and a half, and I spoke. Guy comes up to me after me and says, when you said turkey on the roof, Another guy comes up to me and says, when you talked about this, another guy comes up to me, about 20 people came up to me, saying good things about stuff I said that really impressed them, that changed their life, stuff like that. And they were all about different parts. In other words, I did an hour and a half talk and everyone, I'm sure they all heard the hour and a half, but this has happened to you. Everybody got like one sentence. One guy got a sentence that I talked about when I was talking about like the 10th step. It wasn't even about the 10th step. I was talking about the 4th. He got step 10 out of it. One guy, I was talking about the 4th step. He got step 2 out of it. One guy was talking about it doesn't even matter. They were grabbing stuff I wasn't even saying. They were hearing things that weren't even going on. I have no idea what talk they were listening to. All I know is out of 500 people, there were 500 talks going on, and there were 500 people listening to 500. And if you asked one guy what the talk was, he'd say it's about step 1. Another guy'd say it's about step 10. Another guy said, oh yeah, man, that was the greatest step 4 talk I've ever talked about. Oh man, I got everything. And one guy would say, that guy doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. He doesn't get anything else. So it really doesn't have much to do with what I say tonight. Really. I'm just here trying to carry a message. So we're gonna hit all these deals some way. I want to read this thing to you. It's a little poem I like, right? Yes, I got these little poems. I'll read one or two to you. It's a little interesting things that, and this is called The Guy in the Glass. Now, before I get into this, I need to give you a definition. I'm gonna tell you about a friend of mine, by the way, tonight. I met him, about 10 years ago. His name was Leo. I only met him one time, and it was only not for more than a couple of hours. And he's not an old timer in AA. As a matter of fact, as far as I know, he's not even in AA. I have no idea where he is now. But Leo came into my life, and he changed my life. If you're in AA, or if you're on a spiritual program of action, and you're doing what we're supposed to do, which is what? Seek Him. I know that's what we're supposed to do, because the three things we're supposed to be convinced of is that we're alcoholic and cannot manage our own lives, which after a great deal of study in 27 years, I realize means that we're alcoholic and we can't manage our own lives. That no human power could relieve our alcoholism, which means you ain't going to get it from your husband, ladies, or even if you get married, and guys, you ain't going to get it from that gal, or your wife, or your boss, or your job. It ain't going to come from a human power, that it's only God that's going to give it to you, and seeking Him. And if you don't absolutely 100% believe that, then I guess you're not convinced. Because it says being convinced of these things. But the truth is, my being convinced of these things took place over a period of time. It honestly took place over a period of time. I didn't come out of the womb convinced of these things. Over a period of time. And you know what convinced me of these things? Because the more and more I surrendered the crap in my life, the more and more I surrendered those thoughts and those feelings and those things that I thought I needed in my life in order to be successful and get anything, as they were ripped out of my hands, as I had to surrender the money, as I had to surrender the relationships, as I had to surrender, I fight to hang on to them, as I surrender the thoughts and the feelings and everything you've got to surrender, your whole life you've got to surrender to Him and forfeit to Him. That's when the third time, the more I surrender it, the more incredible, remarkable gifts I get. And all He was trying to do is give me gifts. And all I had to do is surrender, and I didn't want to surrender. I didn't want to give up. I give up the drinking, and look at the incredible gifts I got, but I wasn't going to give up anything else. He'd have to rip it from my hands. And so I'm that's what the book says. I'm just telling you what the book says. I'm a big book guy. The big book says, it says right here, it says, on page 28, the distinguished American psychologist William James, in his book Varieties of Religious Experience, indicates a multiple of ways in which men have discovered God. We have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. If what we have learned and felt or seen means anything at all, it means that all of us, whatever our race, creed, or color, are the children of a living creator with whom we may form a relationship upon simple and understandable terms. Remember the word relationship. It's all about, you see, if I have to say one thing at a first step meeting, if there's only one thing I've got to tell you as far as what I understand about the steps so that you will never be lost in this process, is remember that this is only about one thing. It's not about 12 things or 52 things or 30. It's about one thing. You can do every one of these steps. If you don't get that one thing, you're doomed and you're going to drink or you're going to be miserable. And you don't have to believe me. We'll meet back here 10 years and you'll tell me your experience. Because it's what you know, everybody I've seen, almost everybody who comes to AA gets recovered. Did you know that? You know why people come to AA? Because they want to stop drinking. That's why I came to AA. I mean, I think it's kind of goofy if you come for another reason. I mean, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't stop. I looked a guy in the eye one day and I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. I went to AA. You know what happened? I stopped drinking. No, you may find this hard to believe. This is like remarkable. I could not stop. I mean, most people wouldn't understand this. You guys understand this. I couldn't stop drinking. I couldn't even envision a life without drinking. I came to AA before I even did the steps. Before I knew nothing. I walked into an AA meeting. I couldn't stop drinking. All of a sudden, I stopped drinking. I recovered from a hopeless state of mind. You know what a hopeless state of mind and body is? It's not sucking your thumb because your boyfriend, your girlfriend. It's not all the crap you talk about in AA. It's not all the crap we hear about in AA rooms when people are whining and crying and sucking their thumbs. You know what a hopeless state of mind and body is? You wake up in the morning, you wake up, you have a hangover, you say, I ain't gonna drink again. I'm gonna stop drinking, and that night, you're drunk again. And then you wake up the next morning, you say, I'm not going to drink again. And the next morning, you're drunk again. And you wake up and I'm not going to go to the bar. And the next day, you're in the bar. I'm not going to buy booze. The next day, you drive. And you do it over and over and over and over and over and over and over again until you say, what the hell? I can't stop drinking. I might as well die. And you wish you were dead, but you kind of like, but the funny thing is you want to be dead, but you don't want to stop drinking. You still want to stop breathing. And you know, the truth of the matter is, I forgot his name now. Somebody will remind me who wrote the book Man Against Himself. It was, anybody remember who wrote that book in the 1930s, Man Against Himself? I remember. And noted psychiatrist at the time wrote the book Man Against Himself. Wrote the chapter on alcoholism. And he said, alcoholics are people who are out to destroy themselves. And really what drinking is all about, it's about committing suicide but not having to die. It's a way of blowing your brains out without killing yourself. I mean, I don't want to kill myself, but maybe I can just kill myself. You know what my problem was? I kept on sobering up. If I could have only stayed there, everything would be okay, but I had to sober up and face the bullshit. And so here I am. I can't stop drinking. I come to AA and I stop drinking. Listen to me. Everybody who comes to AA with that problem, you ready? Stops. You know something? Now they say I shouldn't use these statistics. You use whatever statistics you want. But in my world, maybe less than 1% of people that come to AA stay sober for more than 20 years. They drink it 5 years, they drink it 1 year, they may drink it 10 years. Everybody I know who has drank or slipped in Alcoholics Anonymous slipped after they were sober. Everybody I know who slipped after coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, slipped after they recovered from the hopeless state of mind and body. I don't care what your problems are now. I don't care whether they're money problems, financial problems. They're nothing compared to the I can't stop drinking problem. And if you don't understand that, you want to know something? You don't have the same kind of alcoholism I have. Because I remember the I can't stop drinking problem, and it's nothing compared to every other problem. You know why I know it's nothing? Because if a guy came in here tonight, and it happens once every 10 years in AA, used to happen a lot more, comes in tonight and he genuinely has a drinking problem and he says, I can't stop drinking. Everybody gets quiet and they turn to him and they look at him in awe and everybody's looking to see whether he'll pick up a white chip because we know now that's a problem. All this other stuff is like group therapy. And everybody in here recovers from that problem, is recovered from that problem, is lifted up by God from that problem, and is given some of that problem. And you want some? Most of the people I know that have slipped in AA have slipped after they do the steps. So if you think the steps are going to save your ass, I got some bad news for you. The steps are tools. They're tools in order for you to acquire something. And if you can't see or understand, especially after this series, what you're meant to acquire, you just ain't reading we ain't reading the same book. You know, it's like going to a carnival and seeing a painting. And the painting has like a couple of doves on it, you know, and eagles and some and, 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 And you walk up and you look in the painting, it says night painting, and he says, and they say something like, well, do you see the moose? I said, what do you mean moose? Do you see the moose? He says, there's no moose. There's a couple of doves and an eagle. Do you see the moose? The moose is right there. It's green. I said, I don't see it. And you look and see the moose. You don't see it. And some kid comes, little kid comes around and says, do you see the moose? He says, oh yeah, I see him. He's right there. And you look and he says, where do you see this thing? I don't see the, you ever see that? You ever go to a conference and see this optical illusion and say the moose? And you look at it for hours and hours. You stare and you can't see the moose. People going up and says, yeah, I see the moose. And then finally, maybe you catch an eye, and all of a sudden you see the moose. You say, damn, it's a moose. And now every time you look at the thing, you see a moose. Well, a lot of people come in here and they don't see the moose. As a matter of fact, most people come in here and don't see the moose. Remember the word relationship. Our personal stories before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. What are our personal stories supposed to, what am I supposed to talk to you about? What are we supposed to talk about in AA? Am I supposed to talk about my drinking? I mean, you got a drinking problem? You need to hear about my drinking? Listen, I don't know how to solve your drinking problem. I have no clue how to solve your drinking problem. You got a drinking problem? Can't stop drinking? You don't need to be in AA. You need to be out there drinking. A won't solve your drinking problem. A will solve your living problem. A will work on alcoholism. You know what alcoholism is? It's the thing that's going on in you when you're not drinking. Mm-hmm. Alcoholic is used by alcoholics who can't handle alcoholism. I'll tell you what alcoholism is. When you're 18 months sober and you feel your life's falling apart and you want to blow your brains out and you hate the world and it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you feel more alone than you've ever felt in your life, and you know it can't have anything to do with alcohol because you haven't had a drink in 18 months and you don't know what's going on, and that's what's called alcoholism, and now you know why you drink. Alcoholism has to do with everything you feel when you're thinking about stuff other than God. Thinking about the stuff that you're always thinking about. The pelf in your life. I'm going to tell you about the pelf. You guys are all involved in the pelf. So here's what it says in page 29 of There Is a Solution about our personal stories. It's our personal stories that are the key to this thing. So what are we supposed to talk about? What are our personal stories? Here it is on page 29. Further on, clear cut, we can talk about my drinking until the cows come home. And we can all laugh about it like we do. You know, the stories are all the same. Blah, 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 and then I drank. Blah, 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 then I drank. Blah, 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 and then I drank. Blah, 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 blah. You wouldn't believe it. I said I wasn't going to, and then I drank. They're all the same. Page 29. Clear cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 43 personal experiences. You know those, the A, B's, and C's, the ones that we're supposed to be convinced about, which is really sort of like the first three steps before we get, it says that we are now at step three. The A, B's, and C's, the thing that you read before every meeting here, you know what it says? Here's what it says. It says, our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic. That's the chapter to the non-believers. All the other chapters are chapters to the believers. And you know what the chapter to the agnostic says? It says you gotta get over it. It says this sort of thinking has to be abandoned. And our personal adventures before and after make clear these three pertinent ideas. The final one is God is the answer. Remember the word relationship. Page 29. Further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recover. These are followed by 43 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view. This is what we're supposed to be doing. This is what I'm supposed to be doing up here. This is the only thing I have which is of any value to me or to you. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he did the fourth step. The way he did the tenth step. The way he made money. The way he did step eight. No. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. You know, that one thing that the book talks all about on every single page, the moose that we're not allowed to talk about in the fellowship of AA because it makes some people uncomfortable. And so what we need to do, instead of drag people up to what the program is, we need to seep down to the lowest common denominator so we all make sure that we don't drink, but none of us really feel that release. Well, maybe a few. Maybe a few. I don't want to miss Leo. So in Alcoholics Anonymous number 3, which I'll save for another time. So, PELF. And then I want to tell you about Leo, which I think has to do with step 1, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure. But, you know, you'll figure it out. So this is called the guy in the glass. Now, PELF has to do with, it's an old word, an old English word. It has to do with money. PELF is money. Or it's sex. Or it's prestige. Or it's
power.
Or it's everything the natural man that you want crave, that you, it's what you think you need in order to be happy. It's that house in Minnesota. If it's only I could get out of here. If only I could get a better job. You know what PELF is? It's the thing you think about 95% of the time when you're not thinking about good things. It's the thing that you are thinking about 95% of the time when you're not thinking about the things that you should be thinking about, because you can't help but think about PELF because you are addicted to that. And that's why you feel the way you do. And you don't know, and you know, just like I said, remember I said, I need help, I can't stop drinking. After you get rid of the drinking, it's I need help, I can't stop thinking. I can't stop feeling. It's like guys come up to me and say, blah, 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 and I feel like I'm going to kill myself and I feel terrible because this is happening. This is happening. She's doing this, he's doing that, and I'm feeling terrible. And I look at him and I say, well, because they want to know how to solve that problem. I said, well, let me ask you something. How would it be if it didn't bother you? He says, what do you mean? Well, I understand your wife's doing this and your kid's doing this and the dog's doing this. I understand all that. I understand that. But how would it be if it didn't bother you? I said, well, what do you mean if it didn't bother you? Well, if it didn't bother you. What do you mean, if it didn't bother me? Yeah, if it didn't bother you. You mean if her saying that didn't bother me? I said, yeah, her saying that didn't bother me. You mean if it didn't bother me? Yeah, you mean if it didn't bother me at all? No. If it didn't bother you at all. You mean if it didn't bother me at all? If it didn't even bother me? No, it didn't bother me. How would you be if it didn't? Well, if it didn't bother me, I'd be okay. I said, well, there you go. See, I can't fix her. You know, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. Isn't that the spiritual axiom we work under? When you get what you want, and you in your struggle for PELF, and the world makes you king for a day, then go to the mirror and look at yourself and see what that guy has to say. For it isn't your father, your mother, or wife whose judgment you must pass. The fellow whose verdict counts most in your life is the guy staring back from the glass. He's the fellow to please, never mind all the rest, for he's with you clear up to the end, and you passed your most dangerous, difficult test if the guy in the glass is your friend. You may be like Jack Horner and chisel a plum and think you're a wonderful guy, but the man in the glass says you're only a bum if you can't look him straight in the eye. You can fool the whole world down the pathway of years and get pats on the back as you pass, but your final reward will be heartaches and tears if you've cheated the guy in the glass. In the story, he sold himself short. The author says the following at the end of the story. It says, these last 18 years have been the happiest of my life, trite though that statement may seem. 15 of those years I would not have enjoyed had I continued drinking. Doctors told me before I stopped that I had only 3 years at the outside to live. This latest part of my life has had a purpose, not in the great things accomplished, but in daily living. Courage to face each day as we replace the fears and uncertainties of earlier years. Acceptance of things as they are have replaced the old impatient chopping of the bit to conquer the world. I have stopped tilting at windmills, and instead have tried to accomplish the little daily tasks, unimportant in themselves, but tasks that are an integral part of living fully. Where derision, contempt, and pity were once shown me, I now enjoyed the respect of many people, where once I had casual acquaintances, all of whom were fair-weather friends, I now have a host of friends who accept me for what I am. And over my 8 years, I've made many real, honest, sincere friendships that I shall always cherish. I'm rated as a modestly successful man. My stock of material goods isn't great, but I have a fortune in friendships, courage, self-assurance, and honest appraisal of my own abilities. Above all, I have gained the greatest thing, look up in the book when you go home what the great fact is. They talk about it two times, the great fact and the tremendous fact. I have gained the greatest thing accorded to any man, the love and understanding of a gracious God, who has lifted me from the alcoholic scrap heap to a position of trust where I've been able to reap the rich rewards that come from showing a little love for others and from serving them as I can. I'm going to talk to you about a guy named Leo, who's not an alcoholic, I don't think. This has nothing to do with alcoholism. Or maybe it has everything to do with alcoholism. It's like the moose. It's the moose. It has nothing to do with me. I'm just going to tell you a story. Now, here's the cool thing about this story. This is a true story. I don't need to look in a book, or I don't even need to look at notes, because you know why? Because I was there. I was there for this story. When I was 16 years sober, a guy tapped me on the shoulder and asked me whether I wanted to go to a Bible study. You know, which was kind of unusual, because the first thing I said is, I'm Jewish, I don't go to Bible studies, and, you know, for some reason, I don't know why that is, but I started thinking about my mother, my father, my sister, my aunt, all my relatives, you know, who would object to that, and what the world would say in general, because I don't think that's a cool thing, and then I started thinking about all the people in AA that would laugh at me, and one day I'll do a meeting on cell phones. I started looking about on all the people. It's not tonight. I started thinking about all the people that would laugh at me, and then because I had 16 years sober and I've been around for 16 years, I realized that not doing something or doing something because I'm scared of what other people might think of me was bullshit. And it's the way of life I used to live before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, where I was always I bankrupted myself. I've spent money on credit cards I didn't have, buying things I didn't need to impress people I didn't even like. And I started realizing that this has nothing to do with worrying about that if I was going to live a sober life, to live a certain sober life and worry an iota about what other people think about me was not to live a sober life. Because it's 16 years, maybe not at 8 years, maybe not at 3 years, but at 16 years, I was done with that crap. I was ready to soar. I was ready to move on. And the truth of the matter is, if you know anything about what I learned in AA, and you know anything about the history of AA, and you know anything about my sponsors in AA, which I'm not going to share with you right now, I've been reading the Bible all along in the 24-hour book and Sermon on the Mount and everything like that. So there was a reason why this guy asked me, and I did believe in God. I had a belief in God. And so I believe that God puts people in your lives, and he taps you on the shoulder, and you either recognize, you either see the moose or you don't. Or you move on. And then one day you're 80 years and you're 89 years old or 90 years old and you're dying and you're on your deathbed and you go like this and you realize this wasn't a dress rehearsal and you hit yourself in your head and say, I could have had a V8. I screwed the pooch. I screwed the whole thing up. I had this life. It was given to me. It was a gift. And I screwed it. I screwed it because I lived a whole life worrying about what the people in AA would think about me and they didn't give a shit anyway. And I don't have time to go back now because it's way too late. So, because of the grace of God, I said to the guy, no, I'll go. And I went to this Bible study, and I sat around this table with about 50, you know, guys, all of whom were, like, older than me, because I was, like, in my 40s at the time, and they were all in their 60s and 70s and 80s, and they had been studying the Bible for 2 million years, and they were basically talking about the same stuff we talk about, the same stuff, when you're talking about a relationship with God, of course. And then I realized, of course, in the big book and Family of Others, it says we encourage church membership. Encourage church. We don't even take a neutral point of view, because when the whole point is about a relationship with God and you go into the 11th step where you're trying to get more and more, if you want a relationship with God, more, a greater relationship with God, where would you go in our society to get it? To the titty bar? Where are you going to go? I know guys in NA today, yes, in NA today, that come over to AA undercover and will ask me to sponsor people, because you know why? Because they want more. They want somebody with 30 years sobriety, because they're thirsty. They're thirsty. They want more. They're seeking. They're doing what we do. They're the guys, you see them around, they stay sober for 25, 30 years, and they're happy about themselves, and they feel good about themselves. And they're grown-ups, and they're human beings. Those are the men in AA. Those are the women in AA. Those are the people that are not 50 or 60-year-old children in AA looking to find some 18-year-old to make them feel better. Those are the grandfathers and the grandmothers in AA. That's the real deal. Not the boyish horse shit that goes on around here most of the time. It's not cute being 30, 40, and 50 years old and looking at and have the emotions and talking about crap you talked about when you were 15. The gossip and the horse shit. And not being able to turn off a cell phone for one lousy hour because you're so damn important. And you don't give a crap about anybody else except yourself. It's not a funny thing. It's not even a sober thing. So, aren't you glad I don't have 2 hours? So, I'm going to get to Leo. We're going to go about 2 minutes over, but this is where we're going to find out who's sober and who's not. Because I don't remember ever being in a bar. I don't ever remember being in a bar. Hey, if I can drive up here an hour and a half. You know what I mean? You can go for an extra 5 minutes. Because I remember sitting in a bar, you know, I remember sitting in a bar and saying I have to get home because I'm 5 minutes late. The only time I ever saw anybody worry about time is when they get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous and they got more important things to do. Like what? Like what? Zero. Feed the canary. Give me a break. So I get into the bottom of the state. That's where I met my sponsor. Sitting next to me, he's a Baptist preacher and he's 53 years sober. 80-year-old Baptist preacher. He's a crazy guy. One day I'll bring him up here. You know, I he goes with me all over. Some of you guys know him. His name's John. And so in any event, so here's the Leo story. So you know what the big book tells me? It says my purpose now is to be of service to others. You know, my purpose is to he'll give me everything I need if I stay close to him and I do his work well. You know? It says there's going to be great interruptions of my life. Great interruptions of my life. Man, if your life isn't being interrupted all the time, you're not doing this thing. I don't care what you tell me. If your life isn't in constant chaos because you're being interrupted by people on the phone and stuff going on because you're being called to do crap that you don't want to do to help people, you ain't doing this. What you're doing is you're just living your life the way you want to live it and you're adding this crap on, hoping that it'll sort of work. You're just sort of rubbing it on the top. You're not digesting it, and you're not going to stay sober for a long period of time. You're going to be one of these slippers. 9 years, 10 years, I don't care what it is. You know why? Because you still love yourself, and you don't love God. Your life is forfeit to God. You had your chance on your life. You screwed the pooch. You ran your life. I know, because I know who was running my life before I came in here, and I did a lousy job. You came in here. He lifted you up. He gave you the recovery. He recovered you before you even deserved to recover it, and all you had to do was stay close to him and do his work well, and you're not willing to do that because you're selfish. And that's the bottom line. But I'm not talking about you guys. I'm just talking about me. I don't want anybody to get a resentment or anything. So to make a long story short, so where I live, there's a cleaner. It's called Pierre's Cleaners. And I drive up to Pierre's Cleaners, and you can see my house from Pierre's Cleaners. It's like a drive-thru thing. I drive up one day, and I'm going to this Bible study for about a year. And in my car, you know, I got stuff. You know, you guys probably have this. I got like 5 big books. I got a 12 and 12. I got a, you know, whatever, you know, AA comes of age. I got 5 Bibles lying all over. I got stuff. I got books people give me all over that, half of which I haven't read. And on this particular day, I came up and I happened to have this big old huge, I've got 10 different translations of the Bible, this huge new King James. And I'm not telling anybody they got to be Christian or any of that stuff. You understand what I'm saying? I'm just telling you a story. You understand what I'm saying? And we're gonna talk a little bit more. I'm just telling you a story about stuff. And you know, because it says in this book, you can say anything, but it has to do with telling people how you develop your relationship with God. So don't let anybody, Nate, tell you you can't talk about God. Because that's what this thing is all about. That's what the sickness wants to tell you. And that's what people want to tell you because it scares the shit out of them. Because if we talk about the stuff they're talking about in the book, if we really talk about it, then they may have to change. And they may have to do stuff and give up stuff they don't want to give up. You know, like all the other crap that's doing in their life that's hurting them spiritually, bringing them down. So don't let anybody tell you that crap. At least you can tell them there's one guy in Miami that believes it's bullshit. So in any event, so here's the deal. I believe most people want that. I think most people want a message of depth and weight. They don't want the same old bullshit. So in any event, the deal is, I mean, I got I got a wife and six gorgeous grandkids and more on the way. And I'm so grateful to him because and I'm such an idiot because believe me, I had to be forced because I came in here not believing in anything except American Express, Playboy, and sex. And that was it.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.